This podcast is brought to you by BetRivers. Download the BetRivers app from the App Store or Google Play Store. Must be 21. Available in Ohio only. Void where prohibited. Terms and conditions apply. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Sports gaming is provided in partnership with Dayton Real Estate Ventures, LLC, DBA, Hollywood Gaming at Dayton Raceway.
You're listening to Betting Weekly Game Bet Match on the BetRivers Network.
Hello and welcome to Betting Weekly Game Bet Match, the tennis podcast brought to you in association with BetRivers. I'm Nigel Seedy, and usually on a Wednesday, I'm joined by James Blake because James has just been travelling across America, coming home after working on the Australian Open for ESPN. We have to put the day back to Thursday, but it's better late than never. James, glad to have you back. Good to be home. And yes. Safe, good travel, good tournament. Good tournament so far, hasn't it been, the Australian Open?
Been very interesting. Yeah, it's been it was fun. I mean, you never know what to expect. There's always it seems like every Grand Slam, there's one of these pretty inspirational stories, like Magda Linette, you know, Tatiana Maria a few slams ago. And so those are fun. And you never know. I mean, really don't know what to expect. I mean, now, except that it's the Australian Open, so you do expect Novak to be deep. And that goes true to form.
Yeah, I mean, you called a lot of games. What was the takeout game, the match that you enjoyed most watching?
Well, the one that I called that I enjoyed the most probably was Murray and Berrettini. And then the next match that he played was probably the match of the tournament with him against Kokkinakis. So those were both really exciting and fun to see early rounds. Otherwise, I mean, for me, American. I'm admittedly a homer at times, and you know, love seeing so many Americans do pretty darn well, and one's still going. So it's pretty exciting times for American fans.
We'll come on to the American participation and the future for American tennis a bit later on in this edition of Game Bet Match. But I'll tell you about that. I was I had a meeting in London, and the day of the Murray Kokkinakis game, and I had to meet someone at I think it was about 12 o'clock. And I left at 3:30 in the afternoon. The game was still going on, and there was like literally 12 o'clock. There was three people watching the tennis in where we had the meeting. And by 3:30, there was about 303 people. It was an incredible game. And I couldn't believe it was still going on when we left. And, you know, it was an amazing performance. Just ran out of legs when he fought Batista Agut. But even in the second set, he played some sensational tennis. So for us, amazing.
Yeah, it really was incredible. And great to see him still performing at a really high level, but I think even a healthy 25-year-old playing those 2 5-setters in a row, finishing at 4 a.m, would have a tough time coming back and playing another player like Bautista Agut. So, you know, tough for that situation, but great to see him, you know, playing that well on that level, at least for a few matches before his body gives out.
I don't know if you saw the tweet. It was yesterday or the day before. He came back from Australia, and he took his 6-year-old to school. Did you see the tweet he said?
I didn't see that, no.
The 6-year, I don't know if it was his daughter or his son, like, I don't know, but he's got a 6-year-old. He was on the school run, and he's just come back after heroics. And she said to him, Daddy, when you drop me off, please do not kiss me. Let me go in on my own. And he said, how things have changed in that month that he's been away, how things have changed. It gets us all.
It happens to all of us. Yeah. I mean, my daughters don't like that. I've already embarrassed them since I've been home. I've only been home a day. And I think just last night we went to dinner and said, this is why you embarrass me, Daddy. And that's to be expected.
Well, I get a text from my daughter's 21 now. And I get a text from my daughter, and it usually starts, Dad, can I ask a favor?
Yeah.
And then my text says, how much? ? And that is the text. That's my relationship with my daughter now. It's amazing.
Yeah.
But cherish those moments. You know, it made me laugh. The daddy come home, the fantastic tennis player was left in Melbourne, but the dad was home and he wasn't allowed to kiss his 6-year-old goodbye for school. Amazing thing. Anyway, the tournament's been an amazing tournament. We touched on it, Novak Djokovic, sensational coming through to the semifinals. We have two semifinals overnight in America. We have Stefanos Tsitsipas against Khachanov. We have Tommy Paul, obviously leading the American hopes against Novak Djokovic, and looks an impossible mission for Tommy Paul. Just a bit of a breakdown. How do you see those games going, and where do you see, you know, if there was any potential shock, where would it be happening?
Well, I mean, I think for American fans, they're hoping for the huge shock of Tommy Paul winning against Novak, but I don't I don't see that. The way Novak's playing and the fact that he's now pain-free has been, I think, even worse for the rest of the field, because he started out the tournament with a little bit of a question mark and that hamstring injury lingering a little bit. And the fact that it's gotten better over time, and early on, it seemed like he was going for his forehand a little bit more, hitting a little more aggressive, a little bit harder, ending points a little quicker, and realizing that he has that ability and can do that. It's added to the fact that now that it does seem like the hamstring is healed up and he's fine. His movement and defense is always incredible. And now he's adding the fact that that forehand's getting more offensive. It just looks like it's unstoppable. And as much as I like Tommy Paul, he's a great kid. He's going to have an unbelievable future and a great career. I think it's too much to ask. I think it's too much to ask to even get a set off of Novak. I think the way Novak's playing, I wouldn't at all be surprised if he goes six more sets and that's it. He's playing just that well. On the other side, I think that's going to be a really good matchup. So I don't think anything would surprise me between Tsitsipas and Khachanov, because they're both playing really well. Tsitsipas has been pretty quiet throughout this event. I haven't heard as much talk about him. I know you liked him early on, but there hasn't been a ton of hoopla around him. It's almost like it's becoming more expected for him to be a little deeper in slams. Khachanov, two in a row now into the semifinals after the U.S. Open. He played great against Seb Korda. I would have loved to have seen Seb Korda be totally healthy for that one, because it was shaping up to be a pretty darn good match. But the way Khachanov is serving, I think he's going to give Tsitsipas some problems. But I think the experience of Tsitsipas in the end will come through in a close one. I think if I were to think about anything for these two, it might be the over in the Tsitsipas Khachanov and the under in the Djokovic Paul, because I think it's going to be pretty one-sided in the Djokovic-Paul, and I think it's going to be really really close in the Tsitsipas-Khachanov.
Yeah, if you look at the overs, the over with Bet Rivers on the Djokovic v. Tommy Paul is 30.5 games, which is relatively low for a Grand Slam semifinal. Khachanov against Tsitsipas is 39.5, so it's a 9.5 games differential between the two. Yeah. And Novak Djokovic is a minus 2,500 favourite, which is incredible. Tommy Paul is plus 1,200, and in Tsitsipas he's minus 265, and Khachanov is plus 220. So one thing I will ask you, I mean, there's been a lot of talk about Novak Djokovic's injuries, and you know, is he, you know, the way he sort of has the injury timeouts, and a lot of people are questioning how injured Novak Djokovic has been. The betting market, whenever he has an injury, it goes crazy. You know, everyone thinks, oh, he's going to get beat. Everyone goes mad. But yeah. Tennis bettors like myself, over watching Djokovic's career, he does it an awful lot. Do you think that he needs that kind of sort of, I don't know, a psychological thing that he's doing, or do you genuinely believe that, you know, he's in as much pain as he's given across?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to say in the ones in the past. This one, I do think he's been injured. And the main reason, I think, for me, that was the indicator was that he wasn't practicing on his days off. For someone that relies on rhythm and does need to hit a lot of balls, not practicing on your day off means he's really worried about the recovery. And the fact that it's now feeling good, like, I don't think he's injured at all right now going into the semis and the finals, but I do believe in the first round and second round, he was nervous because whether it was a slight pull in his hamstring or whatever it was, I do think there was an effect there on his hamstring. And I think as you saw, it got better. That's something that for any athlete, if you're going into a big event and you've got a little nagging injury, you're scared it's going to get worse, and play 3 out of 5, it's going to, you know, get tired and get worse and worse. And the fact that it got better in that first round, I think that was the huge kind of like over the hump moment of like, okay, I'm going to be all right. It's going to be okay. It's going to get better. It's not getting worse. It's going to only get better with time. And all the preparation he was doing, I mean, I think he was sleeping in a hyperbaric chamber, doing time in a hyperbaric chamber, doing all that like oxygenated stuff and ice bath, all the kind of stuff that you need to do to heal. I mean, he's as meticulous as anyone can be about his body. So I think now he's gotten to the point where he's healthy. The other stuff, the times when he takes injury timeouts, and I think he's somewhat demonstrative. I mean, you see that in when he gets upset, when he gets happy, he's someone that kind of wears things on his sleeve. And so they're probably maybe I don't want to say exaggerated, but they're, it seems bigger than it is because he's just demonstrative, as opposed to you look at someone like Roger, who is very calm and cool and collected. And so I think people do maybe make it a bigger deal than it is because he just, you know, you just see that and it's coming out. But I think there've been plenty of times he has been injured on tour and it's caused him problems. But I think this time he was injured to start, but he's, in my opinion, he's fine now.
Yeah, if anyone's been watching the Netflix documentary of with Novak's last year in the at Melbourne, and you know the anger it caused, and you can see the motivation, I believe, in him when he goes on court, that he wants to with that 10th one to sort of show everyone that I'm back and I'm ready. But you know, with his injury, I mean, he's been brushing aside the opponents. You know, do you think that we're seeing a peak Novak Djokovic? Where do you think Novak Djokovic was at his peak? I mean, it's very hard to say because obviously he was going to run into Rafa's at the peak. He was going to run into Roger Federer's at the peak and other key players who were in around the top 10. Andy Murray's, you had Del Potro, all these kind of players around at the time. I would argue that the caliber of player in the men's draw isn't as strong as it was in those peak. Oh, the gap. You know, the top 10 and the young kids coming through are exceptional, but I would argue at a peak level. So are we seeing a Djokovic, do you believe, at the top of his game? Or do you think Djokovic 3 years ago or 4 years ago was the man, and it may be a little bit of a decline in men's tennis at the moment?
I actually think he's playing as well or better than he's played before. And it is crazy to think of that at his age, but I think his added things. He's improved so much. I think maybe 4 or 5 years ago, there were things that maybe could be picked on. His serve wasn't as dominant as it has been. He wasn't backing it up as well. And like I said, his forehand, the way he's hitting it now, this tournament, especially the last couple rounds, has looked even better than he was been hitting it the last few years. So I think he's a little bit more comfortable at net. I mean, he's still not, he's still never going to be Sampras or Edberg up there, but he's getting more comfortable. So I actually think he's playing as well as he's played, which is, it's really scary. I don't know how long that can last. Cause I mean, obviously when you're 25 and you're playing that well, you think, okay, you got 10 more years of this, but at 35, you know, if you're playing that great, there will be injuries that may come in and they may take longer to heal as well as he does with his body. Just the same as Tom Brady, and, you know, Father Time does take its toll at some point. And at 35, if he's playing this well, do we maybe only have this for another year or two until a steep decline happens or one bad injury causes it to being a situation where it's really not even worth the comeback or something like that. But the way he's actually playing, just the tennis part, I'd probably take him right now over Novak 4 or 5 years ago, because I just think he's playing smarter. He's playing more controlled, and then being even more aggressive with his forehand. So I like the way he's playing right now.
I think we've just got to enjoy it, haven't we? Because we're not going to have
we might only have it for another year or two.
Yeah, you're not going to have a domination and the talent that we've seen. We're very lucky to be able to watch over the last few years. Yeah. Nadal, Federer, and Djokovic. Just talking about Djokovic. I mean, I'm quite domesticated at home, James. Obviously, I do the hoovering. I do, you know, my wife. She gives me a list of things to do, and I obviously do them. We have to have a good life. You know, if we don't do those things, we're in trouble. So there's nothing more. But an unhappy wife, unhappy life. Yeah. So she sends me these jobs to do, and I was watching the Djokovic, the Memoir game. And, you know, obviously the tennis crowd is two sets to love, and their local boys behind. They want to get their money. They want to get the value for their money. And I heard these big cheers in Australia, and I couldn't see the scoreboard, but the commentator wasn't giving the score. And I thought, well, honestly, if Dimitrov was making a comeback here, but it wasn't. Yeah. It was Djokovic on break points. And that's the testament of the guy and what he means to tennis fans, that he's beating the guy in Melbourne and Homer. And everyone's cheering him because everybody wants to see a 5-set. Everyone wants to see a 4-set. No one wants to see a 6-2, 6-2, 6-2 match. And they were giving him that kind. I was doing my chores, hearing the scores, and as it's a rhyme, doing my chores, hearing the scores. And I thought that it was going to be that way. But that just shows you what a legend is. Anyway, he's -$4 to win the 2023 Australian Open. And Stefanos Tsitsipas is plus $4. Karin Khachanov is plus 1,400. And Tommy Paul, the outsider, at plus 3,300. That's the men's semifinals. We know the final in the women's. It's Rybakina, the Wimbledon champion, up against Sabalenka. The one thing we do know here, these two are going to go toe-to-toe. They're going to be hitting shots. Yeah. It's going to be very, very heavy. Sabalenka is actually the favourite, despite her not winning a major, and also question marks about her temperament, question marks about her ability to get to this stage and win this stage. But she does hold a 3-1 head-to-head lead. And they met recently this year in Dubai in the exhibition game, which Rybakina won. But at Wimbledon, Sabalenka won in 2 sets to 1, but every single game match, sorry, every single match these two have played has gone the distance. This is going to be a classic, I think.
I think so too, and I think Sabalenka being the favorite is for the main reason that you just said, is there's question marks about her temperament, but she's proven throughout this tournament that seems to be very much changed. She's been calm. She's gotten herself, I'd say the match she played, she's played great in every match, with the exception of maybe that Donna Vekic match, where she definitely didn't play her best. It was kind of littered with some errors, a few double faults creeping in, and she didn't panic. She got through a tough first set, and then her game started to rise a little bit, and Vekic just never did. It just stayed kind of ugly for her. So the fact that Sabalenka has remained calm throughout all the matches thus far in this event, to me, lets me know that it seems like she is ready, because for so long she's been, is she going to win this slam? She's got an opportunity here. US Open a couple of years ago when Raducanu won it. Wimbledon when Ash Barty won it, they thought, okay, maybe Sabalenka could win that one. She's had opportunities, and it seems like people are waiting for this chance. And now it seems like her mind has caught up to that and has seemed a lot calmer. The shots are there. I mean, she is extremely powerful off both sides. She can hurt you off both sides, even more so off the forehand, but the backhand is dangerous too. Her serve has sort of stabilized. Last year at this time, she was averaging over 12 double faults a match, and that was, you can't compete that way. And the fact that her serve has become stable, I think, has translated to kind of trickle down into the rest of her game, that confidence is there for the rest of the game. Rybakina is pretty highs and lows kind of thing. Like they're both huge hitters. So it's just going to be a matter of who's able to execute. Rybakina has the experience of winning a Grand Slam already, so she might not be as nervous, but I think the reason Sabalenka is a favorite is because for one, the head-to-head, but also her temperament has been looking like that she's ready for this moment now. And if she is, I think that she should be the favorite, and that she deserves to be a slight favorite, because I think she's got a little better chance of winning this the way she's been playing. Nothing would surprise me in this one, because both of them are huge hitters. And if one of them goes off a little bit, I think, that could just be the end of the match, because the other one could just take that and grab the match by its throat and take over. But I do see that there's a decent chance it'll be a three-setter, and I would favor Sabalenka a tiny bit, but it's probably pretty fair with that, saying that she's a slight favorite.
Yeah, slight favorite, minus 136 with Bet Rivers, plus 15 Rybakina. The totals is 22.5, which is quite high for women's tennis, 22.5. You know, I wouldn't like to play 22.5. I always like to play 21.5. It's like a big point in American football. 22.5 is a big game. Over 22.5 is minus 108. Under is minus 112. Sabalenka, amazingly this year, is 10-0, and she's won every single game without every single match she's played. She hasn't lost a set, so she's won every single one. But this is a unique battle and a fantastic matchup for me. It's a great box, like a boxing fight, having a brilliant matchup. You've got the Grand Slam champion in Rybakina, who's done it, won Wimbledon. When she won Wimbledon, she didn't even cheer. She just cheered.
I know, she's amazing.
Walked in as though she was just winning the local school championship. Didn't even bother about it.
That's like her thing now. She just doesn't, there's no reaction. It's incredible.
Unbelievable. Sabalenka, there was more reaction in my house because I bet her to beat your boy. I should have had the camera on me. It was crazy. Sabalenka, on the other hand, is all reaction. She's all powerful. Yeah. She wins every shot. So it's a really great match. If you're going to watch it, obviously it's on, I think, Saturday morning in American time. I think that'd be right. I think it's 3:30 a.m. On Saturday morning, US time, Eastern time. So stay up early. You watch that game. It'll be an absolute brilliant game. 22.5 is the line. I think both myself and James are leaning towards over the games on that. Okay, that's the final. That's for now. That's the Australian Open. That's where we are now. And it's a good future. Now, this tournament, we're probably not going to have an American winner of the men's singles. It's fair to say. We know we're not going to have an American winner of the women's singles, but US tennis is in great shape this week. This week, Tommy Paul making the semifinals, Ben Shelton coming out from nowhere. The guy that you highlighted as a player to follow this year, anyone who's listened to your advice has got a Grand Slam quarterfinalist in the first Grand Slam. JJ Wolf played exceptionally well, and Sebastian Korda, obviously, would love to have seen him fit against Khachanov, but obviously just ran out of legs there. In the women's side, Jess Pegula, you know, doing what she does, winning tours. You know, she'd probably be disappointed with her performance, but she's there or thereabouts. And obviously Coco Gauff, who just needs it a little bit slower, as we said before, French Open time could be Coco Gauff's time. But it's good time for American tennis, isn't it? It's a lot to look forward to.
So much to look forward to, and it is great to see. And that's with probably the two, you would think the two favorites not doing as well between Tiafoe and Fritz, who had, you know, Tiafoe had a pretty good opportunity. He was up 6-1 in the fourth set tiebreak against Khachanov, take it to the fifth set. Never know what's going to happen in a fifth set, but he was playing well. He is still playing well, I think. And I think these kind of moments from Tommy Paul and JJ Wolf and Ben Shelton and Sebi Korda, that's going to push these other top guys as well. And that's without Riley Opelka even being healthy yet. When he gets back to being healthy, I think it'll push him. And we had a big win from Jensen Brooksby over Casper Ruud there. So the American tennis players are doing great. They're pushing each other. They're doing it. I just saw something where they're joking about and saying they're even closer than the group of myself and Andy and Marty and Robbie Ginepri, that, you know, we were such good friends, and these guys are even closer friends, and they're always talking to each other, always pumping each other up. So that's so fun for me to hear that these guys really like each other and then still want to kick some butt on the court too. So I love seeing that. And I think they all have a really positive futures. On the women's side, Pegula, yeah, probably disappointed in that one performance against Azarenka. Azarenka played pretty inspired tennis that day. But Pegula has this, this was a good opportunity for her and a chance for her to maybe get her first Grand Slam, or at least get to her first final. Not able to do it. A little disappointing, but she's played great tennis so far this year. Same with Coco Gauff. She came up against Ostapenko. That's a tough matchup for her. It's a tough matchup for anyone because Ostapenko is so unpredictable. She can hit winners from anywhere, but she can make errors from anywhere. She can get under a player's skin. And I don't think that's what happened against Coco. I think it was just the unpredictability of her shots. And the fact that she hits so flat and through the court, that it was a problem for Coco's forehand. But you know, she'll go back to the drawing board, and I think she'll be okay. And they actually have a chance to win the doubles too. Coco and Pegula are in the doubles, and they're having a lot of fun there. I think that really helps both their mindsets when they have a tough loss, like they both did here. They get back and they get in the winning way on the doubles court. I look for Coco to have her best chance at the French Open anyway. Just the slower courts are going to be better for her. So the next Grand Slam is, you know, you hope for Coco's sake that she's kind of coming into her own and can have more success and maybe even get herself a title there at the French Open.
Yeah, I mean, she's going to be a fancy contender. I'm going to get you the odds for her to win the French Open now. She's plus 1,700 to win the French Open.
So much can happen between now and then, but I like her chances to do well on the clay.
Well, she's ranked the same as Caroline Garcia, and Caroline Garcia has been exceptional, but the pressure for a French girl to win the French Open and someone like Caroline Garcia, I think, is going to be too strong for her. And obviously, she's got to beat Świątek. We're going to come to a question from Świątek in a second, but the one thing I would say is I want to have a beer with Francis Tiafoe. Set me up. When I'm in America, next time I'm at a tournament, I want to hang out again. He looks so much fun. I think we should go and have a couple of beers and we could go to karaoke and sing some songs or something. I would love to hang out with Francis Tiafoe. You can set me up for me, James. That'd be brilliant.
You got to get in line. Everyone wants to hang with him, and for good reason. I mean, you saw that United Cup, how much fun they had, and all of them were drawing the locks on the screen when they were signing their names after winning, and that was all started by Francis. I mean, he's got that kind of personality that makes people smile, makes people want to have a good time. When he was winning matches, I would see at Australia that the person coming to the net, he was making them laugh at the net. You know, normally that's a very you know, conciliatory. Oh man, I'm sorry, bad luck. Sorry. And he's cracking them up. You know, he's making the umpires laugh. He's having a great time, and he makes sure people around him are having a great time too. And I think a lot of people when he started out were worried about that he's just having too much fun. He's goofing around. He's not that serious. He's showing now that he can combine the fact that he's very serious about his career, but also can still make sure to have some lighter moments and have some fun. And I love the fact that he's been able to manage that the way he has now, getting in towards the middle of his career.
I think the one thing about these young tennis players coming up now, I don't think they've ever had a better opportunity for the years to actually break through and become world number one, win tournaments, because, you know, once Novak goes, he can't go on like this for another 3 or 4 years. But if you're 23, 24, and you're in the world, you know, Nadal's going to par. You're going to have obviously Djokovic and Federer obviously gone. It's a great time to be a young tennis player because it's opportunities for majors. I mean, when you were around, you know, you had Sampras, you had Agassi, then all of a sudden Roger started coming up, Rafa started coming up. But now for these young players, there's not much to beat now, is there? Once it's gone.
It's very exciting, and it's interesting as a fan to see what's going to happen, because it does look like there might be a lot more parity. So there might be guys like Sinner, Tsitsipas, Khachanov, Rublev, Medvedev that win, you know, one slam here and then 2 years later win one more slam, and not the situation where it's every single slam, it's either Roger, Rafa, or Novak that's the favorite. And every single slam, one of them comes through. It's going to be, well, there's 12 guys that can win the slam, and what's going to happen, and who's going to play better, and who's changed coaches, who's changed a pair, you know, equipment, who's making progress, who's doing it, who's playing better on this surface, and who's got a better draw, who's got tougher conditions because they're playing late or they're playing in the middle of the day in the heat. So there's going to be a lot more, and there are those opportunities. And so you're right, if you're 22, 23, 25 years old, now is your time to think, you know what, I've got these next 5 or 10 years where there is this opening, and who's going to fill it? Who's going to be the next one that's taking all of these grand slams to themselves and really taking charge? And there might not be anyone. And that'll be interesting too, because we've had so long where there's been domination by just a few, that maybe having parity and variety for the next 10, 15 years might be the way it goes. And that can be really interesting too, because there's so much up there and who's going to separate themselves a little bit.
Exciting times ahead in the men's tennis game, as well as the women's tennis game, because there's not really a dominant force in that at the moment either. We'll come on to the last question. We got it from a view, which we'll mention. But obviously, we talk about players who we want to take out from the Australian Open. Obviously, the Hecker was a bit of a takeout for me. I was very impressed with him. But I think Ben Shelton is the one, isn't he? I mean, you mentioned him before. His serving stats were insane. I mean, he hardly broke serve. Obviously, he just ran out of legs, I think, in that game against Tommy Paul. He just got a bit tired. Yeah. And he lost 3-1. But When the grass season comes around, no one's going to want to be playing this lad at Wimbledon, will they?
No, he's, as I said earlier, he's a special talent. He's a guy that he's got the pedigree. His dad was a pro player, and he's learned from him, both extremely reserved, extremely like really polite, great people off the court. And on the court, he is a competitor. Even when, like you said, he ran out of gas. I mean, it's pretty apparent he ran out of gas against Tommy Paul. The guy had played 1 3-out-of-5 set match before professionally before coming into the Australian Open, and had to play 5 in less than 2 weeks at the Aussie Open. So pretty crazy for him to do that well. And then he was completely out of gas and still fought hard to get that third set against Tommy Paul. So I don't think you can question his heart. The legs will come. He's 20 years old. He's going to get stronger. He's going to get more used to competing at this level, and how much it's going to take out of his legs, and what he's going to need to do in terms of his preparation, which that can be learned. You know, getting in shape for slams, that's something that I don't think is going to be a problem for him. So I think once it does come and he's able to serve the way he was serving in those first 4 matches, barely getting broken. I think he went 65 or 66 games in a row without getting broken. I mean, that's nearing the kind of Federer Sampras type levels of, and granted it wasn't against the top players. These are still guys that are in second, third, fourth rounds of Grand Slam. So it's not against, you know, your local pro. It's pretty real, to have that many in a row, the way he's serving. And He's got a big first serve. He's not afraid to go big on his second serve. And then he can follow it up with big forehands, and the rest of his game is going to keep getting better. So he's definitely someone that's, he's going to be top 50 now already. I could see him top 30. I could honestly see him seated at the US Open. I just like the way he's playing, and he's got a good head on his shoulders. He's being helped by Dean Goldfein right now and his dad. So I think he's got huge upside, and I mean, we'll see. But I mean, the other thing is he's helping to push the rest of these Americans, and they're going to help push him. You know, he lost to Tommy Paul right there. And that's going to be a big, those kind of things will turn into big rivalries. And we'll see with these Americans, which ones are the biggest of the rivalries between all these guys, between JJ and Ben and Tommy and Francis and Taylor and all these guys, and Riley, when he comes back. That'll be an interesting matchup. Ben Shelton against Riley Opelka, two huge servers. Who's gonna figure rally out a way to get a break?
Longest rally over 4.5 shots. Longest rally. Total games will be the highest ever in the line will be insane. The one thing that did impress me when he played Popperin in the third round, he was the underdog going into the against an Australian, and he took it in his stride, and he was absolutely exceptional, which was for a young lad was very, very good. Admittedly, Popperin was absolutely exhausted because he beat Taylor Fritz that he did the night before, but he's still got to get over the line against that. So good future ahead for Ben Shelton. I've got him penciled in for the week before Wimbledon. He's going to get to the semi-finals at least at the Queen's Club, or if he goes to the German tournaments or Ross Marlon, he's going to win them. That's right.
Yeah, Holly's got actually probably the courts are probably even better for a server and Holly there. Queens, actually, it's almost because the courts at Queens are so good that they play so true that it's probably a little better. A few of the bad bounces at Holly are better for those huge servers.
That's where I've got him penciled in. I've got him. That's where I think that's where we're going to get in cash in on one of these tours the week before Wimbledon. In a tour when all the big seeds are looking at Wimbledon, and he'll come through well. Hasn't played a game on grass yet, so we'll have to see how he performs. The final part of the show, we've just got a question from one of our viewers. And if you've got a question for James or myself, if you want to know where I get my fashion clothes, you want to get where I get my my hairspray, you can always just message me, no problem whatsoever. But if you have got any questions, please obviously tweet us at Because We Win, and we're happy to answer any questions. We've got a question from J-Rod, who's a big tennis fan. He always watches the shows and comments on the show. He want to ask you, James, is about a question about Iga Świątek. He asked the question, where does she go from here? Is the pressure of world number one getting to her? That's the first part of his question. So we want to answer that bit first. Świątek obviously beaten, and the Australian Open courts don't do her, her surface. But I think the manner of her defeats and the way that she's handling herself at the moment has got a big question mark about her temperament. If you could answer that question, what are your thoughts on Świątek?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's way too early to panic about that. And I think that's part of the problem is that people see one loss and say, is it too much? Is it too much? What are you going to do? And do we need to change something? No, she had one loss. It's okay. And like you said, the Australian Open isn't exactly perfectly fit for her. The way she lost to Rybakina, and it was, it was pretty standard the way Rybakina beat her. It wasn't like she beat her 7-6 in the third or anything. She took her out pretty handily. But Rybakina can do that. She's her game is huge. And when she's playing well, as she showed at Wimbledon, she could beat anyone, especially when the courts are playing a little quicker. So I'm not panicked about that. If it turns into, quite an extended time where Świątek is having trouble winning, okay, then we can start talking about it. But I think people make way too much out of one or two events when someone's number one in the world. And she, it's not like she's newly number one in the world. She's been there since March of last year. So she's had time to get used to it. And since then, she's still won Grand Slam titles. So I think she's actually, if anything, probably getting more and more used to being the number one seed, the one with the target on her back, and the one that everyone is expecting to win. And I think she's also probably realizing what players like Serena, Roger, Rafa, and Novak have gone through for decades, which, is this every single slam if you lose, especially if you lose kind of early, it's this panic of what's going on. What did you do wrong? Do you need to change something? And that's pretty difficult to deal with. So we'll see how she handles this. I'm not gonna be the one that I haven't spoken to her. I'm not gonna be the one to say that she absolutely is gonna panic and go down a spiral right now, or she's gonna just use this, turn right around, get back on the practice court, and go back to having the confidence that she should have because she's number one in the world and has proved that she's been far and away the most dominant player on the women's side for the last year. Even with this loss here and the loss at United Cup, she's still been extremely dominant when it comes to women's tennis. We're so used to the total domination of the big three on the men's side. And before all this parity in the women's side, we were used to Serena dominating on her own. So you're not always going to have a Serena, you know, that's not going to be the case. So one loss for me for Swiatek isn't telling me she's not number one in the world, or isn't telling me she needs to panic yet.
I think it's a reaction when you're number one. You're there to be shot at, aren't you? You're going to deal with that pressure, and you'll do that. And also, I think Jay Rawls probably better to win the Australian Open. That's why he's asked the question. But the way he did also ask the final question was, what can she do on hard courts and grass to equal her clay court success? We pushed for a little bit of time. If you can answer that one very quickly, what she can do in the game.
I think it's her forehand gets pressed on the really fast courts. And I think you saw it from Rybakina. It's the big hitters that are going to give her trouble on those fast courts. So if there is a way for her to kind of shorten up that swing a little bit, her backhand is still lethal. Her movement's great, but it takes away some of her movement because her movement is one of her strengths. And when you got a really fast court, it doesn't give her the opportunity to play defense as much. So I think she's got to still play her game. She obviously proved it at the U.S. Open that she can be successful on a hard court that's relatively quick. So I don't think she needs to do much, maybe tweak a thing here or there, but not a ton.
Yeah, not a ton at all. Don't worry too much. Iga Swiatek better. She'll be back at the French Open. She's the woman to beat. She's still number one. Had a bad day at the office against Rybakina, but that happens to everybody. James, it's always been a pleasure. I always love talking tennis with you every Wednesday, this week, Thursday, but we'll be back next Wednesday as well, looking ahead at all the big talking points in tennis. Myself and Sean Calvert will be back tomorrow. We'll be previewing the men's final. We know the finalists. We'll look at the men's final ahead of the weekend, and Roy Girardi will be sending some stuff on Twitter looking at the women's final. Good luck with your bets if you're going to have a wager on the tennis over the weekend. Enjoy the game. I think the women's final is going to be absolutely fantastic. Let's hope Tommy Paul can really give it a good goal throw against Novak Djokovic and make it really entertaining and exciting for American tennis bettors. James, thank you as always for joining me. I'll speak to you all next week. Take care, everyone. And that's Game Bet Match.
Thanks for listening to Betting Weekly Game Bet Match on the Bet Rivers Network.